Do you know what, Jen? I don't think I've ever looked better in my life. I think I'm at the peak of my physical prowess.
I think you are.
At the moment. And yeah. I would love to share that with people. I'd love people to be able to see me in the flesh.
It's selfish to keep this.
It is. This amount of radiance needs to be shared. So I thought what I would do is invite people along to see me in real life.
To be in the same room at the Museum of Comedy.
At the Museum of Comedy, because comedy is what I do most of the time.
And you belong in a museum.
No.
It was, how rude.
My self-esteem had climbed and now it's back down on the floor. But no, I love the Museum of Comedy and I'm going to go there and I'm going to take my raw magnetism with me on Wednesday the 24th of April.
Can I come too?
You can. Just try not to sort of detract from my glow, you know.
Okay.
We are going to have the magnificent Jenny Ryan, a magnificent guest.
Ooh.
TBA. Wednesday the 24th of April. Put it in your diaries. Bring your sunglasses because I am shining.
Yeah, get your tickets now. The link is in our social media or from the Museum of Comedy website.
Oh, please do come. Jen's all right as well.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What's your name?
Jenny Ryan.
Correct. What's my name?
Lucy Porter.
Correct. What are we doing?
We're making a podcast all about quizzing.
Correct. What's it called?
Fingers on Buzzers.
Correct. Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Fingers
on
Buzzers.
Hey.
That's what it is. And it's a pact. It's a bonanza. It's a jamboree. We've got David Smith, who has fulfilled my dream of being on Only Connect.
You're the only one left now.
I know, that's it. Everyone else in the world has been on Only Connect, even Amanda, the producer. Mm-hmm. Everyone's been on it. We've also got a listener quiz from Duncan Saunders. What a good name, Duncan Saunders, which is about Harry Potter, which
marvellous.
I'm very confident about.
That's very exciting.
So and inevitably, I shall get 0 points. But yeah. And we will also be interviewing, I'm so excited about this, the host of Tipping Point. It can only be the one and the only, Mr. Ben Shepherd.
We're going to talk about drop zone technique.
I know. Oh, that's a good drop. I love it when he says that.
A ghost
that's
drop.
A good drop.
Oh, I like a ghost drop, Nino. When the silent. Silent, but it's kind of like he's made up lots of terminology that could be used for poos.
Yeah, I wonder if that's...
It's a rider.
We shall find out whether he says when he goes to the lab. I'm just going to the drop zone, darling. Maybe sometime. So all of that plus an insight into quizzing in the noughties coming up now on Fingers on Buzzers. Okay, so now we reach the bit of our quizzing history, which is the noughties. So to me, this is like, well, this is now, but obviously it's
no.
not.
No, this is when I...
From 19 years ago.
This is when I got involved in TV quizzing.
Yes.
So this is, I'm feeling on comfortable ground.
Yeah, well, yeah, so you were... Well, I mean, the noughties was the decade in which all of the great quizzes that we know and love now were introduced. So you've got your Eggheads and QI, 2003. Only Connect, 2008. Mm. And then The Chase, and
Never
Pointless, the other one that we don't know, 2009. So all of the great quizzes that we are now enjoying were pretty much set up in the noughties. And it was an odd time for quizzing because you'd had that sort of the 90s, you'd had the millionaire scandal, you know, like The Weakest Link, that kind of cruel quizzing was kind of starting
The all or nothing kind of, slightly brutal.
Yes,
there was, and high concept as well.
Well, there was still a bit of a hangover of high concept. In fact, I got sort of taken down a little game show diversion because I was watching Golden Balls, which I always quite enjoyed.
Of course.
Because I love Jasper Carrot, but absolutely baffling. Absolutely baffling, the whole thing, and quite horrible. I hadn't remembered how horrible Golden Balls was at the end, because it's the prisoner's dilemma where you either split the money. If you say you're going to split the money and you both do, then you win it. If one of you says split and the other one says steal, then they steal.
Well, it was the same concept as Shafted, which I like to say, which was another noughties.
Yes.
You know, Robert Kilroy Silk. Oh, where is he now?
Well, do you know, we must do a Shafted special.
Robert, if you are listening.
Please, can we do that?
Please.
There was also, I'll tell you what else I watched, which I'd totally, it would pass me about the time, was The Colour of Money, the Chris Tarrant.
Yes.
Just goes to show, you see, they always thought, well, Chris Tarrant, it's a bit Deal or No Deal. So The Colour of Money was the most stressful show on television. When they had all these cash machines of different colours.
Are you playing Tarrant in the
Yes,
new
I
drama?
Am in the new drama. I am, yes.
Michael Sheen has been sacked.
Cast me. Yes.
That was good.
The most stressful
Well, during that era was the era of the quiz machine as well.
Yes, it really was.
And they were all syndicated from the TV shows.
Yeah,
and I hated playing. The worst one was The Colour of Money.
Because you
had to stop the cash ticker from going up when you thought it was
the money had run out,
because when it went over you didn't get anything from it. And I found that very, I don't want stress in my quiz machine. I want something relaxing. I want Monopoly or something.
Well, it turns out people didn't want stress on the television either, because The Colour of Money.
What about The Chair? Was that noughties?
Do you know, I don't know.
With,
let me have a look.
McEnroe.
Because
that was stress-based as well.
Yes.
That was, you know, they were actually taking your blood pressure and your heart rate.
Yeah.
You weren't allowed to go over a certain, you know, proportion of your resting heart rate or you were out.
Whereas the things that have succeeded from the noughties have been the more cosy, lovely, like Pointless in the Chase.
Yeah, where
QI.
There's a bit of a love in.
Yeah, exactly. Nice.
And it's knowledge, and knowledge is rewarded, not lack of knowledge punished.
That's it, and not deviousness. There was a sort of thing about being a bit mean and bitchy. So the general sort of trend in the noughties was towards the kinder, softer, but very knowledge-based.
Yeah, later into the 90s, we got fed up of.
Yes, and also the high concept thing kind of went out of favour a little bit. But the quiz show of the noughties that I am going to revive in order to test you on was incredibly high concept. I really wasn't familiar with this one. It was called 19 Keys.
Yes.
And it was on Channel 5.
Yep.
So it was on in 2003.
Yes, I was supposed to be on it.
Were you?
I wasn't just on the shortlist. I was due to travel to be on the next step, because it was one of those with rolling contestants.
Yep.
So if someone won, then there was a space on the next show.
Yes.
And then you saw the day before they rang up and said, we're not going to need you.
Oh, no.
I could have won some money from Richard Bacon.
Richard Bacon. Now, it's an amazing thing. I'll just quickly talk you through it. Four contestants are, for some reason, in a cube.
Of course.
Just because I think the design, they enjoyed that. And there are 19 keys, one of which will unlock a prize box.
19 is such a... containing arbitrary number,
an amount of money. Well, it was. It, what's brilliant about it is that it is a completely baffling thing. Poor little Richard Bacon, who in the episode that I watched is wearing the worst outfit I've ever seen on television. The worst suit and jacket combination. It's,
he needed tips from Elton Wellesby, did he?
He really did.
Yeah,
he was not wearing
Boss.
A lovely blouson Hugo Boss jacket. Richard Bacon himself described it as a disaster. And he said, if you ever wondered what it would be like to be in a car crash on the M25 with me shouting questions at you, this is what it was like.
I have had that dream, I think.
Yes.
Anxiety dream.
Richard Bacon, I wouldn't drive with him. So the point of the quiz was that it was against the clock. So it was stress again. So it was the first 15 minutes of the show, the money is building up to a jackpot of £7,500. And then after 20 minutes, the money starts to drop precipitously, like £1,000 a minute or something. And you have to then find your key to unlock the box.
Okay.
Now, I'm not explaining it very well, but what I would urge our listeners to do is just go and watch it. on YouTube.
See if you can figure it out.
Because it is quite baffling, but there's a brilliant episode, and the questions I'm going to test you with were taken from, it's a sort of a Quizmaster special, and it features Jeremy Beadle, I mean, genius quizzer. It features Nicholas Parsons,
legend. He knows his way around a game show, that lad.
And it also features friend of the show, Henry Kelly. Lovely Henry Kelly.
If only we could time travel and go and do some interviews at that recording.
Imagine. Contestant number four on the Game Show Host special was Nick Weir, host of Waffle, the daytime quiz show. The daytime game show on which I...
Bit of a sausage fest, I have to say.
It was a bit, but then, you know, game show hosts at that time.
Yeah, yeah. There weren't that many women in the quiz
there
show.
Weren't.
Oofra.
But yeah, the testosterone in that cube. It was a cube full of...
Testosterone is a bit strong. They were amiable, they were cuddly. Lovely, yeah.
Yes, there were some lovely cuddly men. So as I say, it was against the clock. The time was of the essence. So I'm going to give you a minute's worth of questions and see how long it takes you to get through them.
Okay,
Amanda.
So the more time I save, the more money is in my bank.
The more money I'm going to
get. Okay, cool. You're going to give me some money?
Yeah, I'm going to give you £1.
Your time starts... Now,
what is the main ingredient of the soup borscht?
Beetroot.
Which game show host had the catchphrase "Nothing for a pear"? Not in this game.
Bruce Forsyth.
8x8 is what? 8 times 8.
64.
Yeah. In which sport was Phil Tufnell a famous player?
Cricket.
Which year marked the end of the Second World War?
1945.
Right. Okay. How many was that, Amanda? How long was that?
20 seconds.
20 seconds.
So
wow!
I've won £7,000.
You have £7,500. I'm giving you the key to unlock. There we go. It's in a safety deposit box somewhere in London. Good luck. So that was 19 keys. I urge you to go and have a look at it. And that was what Quizzing in the Noughties was all about. So on the line with us now, I am thrilled to say that we have now a man who I have met on a number of occasions because he is a stalwart supporter of podcasting and comedy and an all-round good egg. And also, as of recently, a contestant on Only Connect. It is Mr. David Smith. Hello, David.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, very well. I watched your Only Connect debut this morning, and we're going to talk you through it in a minute, but you were fantastic, if I may say so.
Thanks very much. Yeah, I was a little nervous about how it was going to come across, but it's good to know that people seem to have enjoyed it.
Yes, did you get some good Twitter feedback?
I have, yeah. I mean, the number of messages that I've received has just been absolutely phenomenal. My phone has been buzzing for the past 24 hours.
Amazing.
And it's been absolutely lovely, yeah, because I was absolutely terrified about it going out. And I was terrified before doing the show as well, if I'm honest. But I was wondering about how the reaction was going to go.
I know, it's funny now, isn't it, that actually the reaction, you know, it's nerve-wracking doing a show, and that has always been the case. But I think now, when a show goes out, certainly I find this, that you do get that massive dread of going, oh my God, what if there's some weird thing
that everyone picks up
kind
on.
Of goes, oh, he picked his nose, or, you know.
That... It's keenly anticipated, though. It was a big pressure to be on the
first episode of the new series.
Very, very hotly anticipated.
Yeah, that was and it was a surprise to us as well, because it wasn't the first one recorded. So we went in, and I think it was about 3 minutes before we went on, they went, just so you know, this is going to be the first episode of the series. So no pressure.
Well, it was a great one to choose for a first episode. Because dramatic, oh my goodness, it was. Shall we do a little? I'll do a very quick sort of talk through for anyone who hasn't seen it. Now, obviously, if anyone's listening and they are still catching up on the last series of Only Connect, then you know, turn off now, go and do something non this. I don't know what I was going to say.
Press pause. And watch it, and then unpause.
Oh, there you go. That's what they. Yes, they should do that. Yeah. They should do that.
27 minutes of your life.
Yes, because it's and it whizzes by. It's amazing.
Oh, it does.
So we started off, and you did correctly. You correctly identified that Sergeant Pepper album cover was one of the things that you identified. Now there was one which was High Street Shops. So there was a picture of Zara Phillips. There was a little map of Iceland. There were some peacocks. And then, so, and your team, you buzzed in at Peacock's to say they're all high street shops, but I heard that you'd got the answer at Iceland.
Oh,
yeah, I was watching it back just before you called me, and I heard my teammate Mark was going, I said, Zara and Iceland are both shops, and he went, well, that's a bit tenuous, and I thought, well, you know, I'd rather be safe, because
you're on the most tenuous show.
The Sergeant Pepper question, we actually didn't get that one right, because we buzzed in after three clues thinking that they were all burial sites, soon as the fourth one came up, it had the Beatles in it next to their own waxworks, and Tim, my teammate, he's a huge fan of pop culture from that time, as is Mark actually as well, and they got it almost immediately. I think it would have taken me a bit longer. So because of that, I think we were a little more cautious about going in for that one. So yeah, we waited until we got the third one, which was the Peacocks, and then we thought, yeah, just go for it.
Yes, and the last one was going to be the Clintons, which was
it was, yeah.
Because speaking of your teammates, so Mark and Tim. So I know both of those from Twitter as well, because they are. So Tim has a blog and podcast. Tim Worthington. He does Looks Unfamiliar, amongst other things.
Oh, yes.
And Mark
is a fantastic podcast.
Yes, and Mark is an amazing chronicler of pop culture, as you say.
Yeah.
And how you were called the Darksiders because of your shared love of Pink Floyd.
Yes.
So why and how?
That was a little bit tenuous as well, if I'm honest. The story of our team name was it wasn't our original team name. So when we did the application, we were thinking, because I didn't know Mark or Tim at all, we were put in touch with each other on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
The first time we actually met in person was the audition. So we had a couple of Skype calls before that, just to see how the team dynamic was and see how our knowledge was. And we were trying to think, it was coming up to the deadline for submitting the application. We'd been doing it for about something like 6 weeks. And we couldn't think of a team name, and we were talking about things that we were interested in, and our original team name was the Time Travelers. And the idea behind that was that we all love stuff from before our time, or, you know, from our childhoods or things like that, because obviously Mark and Tim, Mark's done Looks Unfamiliar quite a lot, and Tim's obviously the host of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big fan of classic rock music and retro video games and loads of things, so we were thinking Time Travelers was quite good in terms of, you know, we love old-timey stuff, basically. The problem is that, as you can probably tell from my explanation, it takes about 5 minutes to explain why. And the thing that they said to us was, it has to be something that can be summed up in one line. You know, Victoria needs to be able to go, united by, and then that's it.
Yes.
So after the audition, we were thinking, because we spent about the same length of time explaining the name in the audition, and they said, okay, well, have a think about other alternatives. So on the way out, me and Tim were talking. We were talking about just music that we like, and we found out that we both like Pink Floyd. And Tim prefers their earlier stuff with Syd Barrett, and I prefer their stuff from sort of Dark Side of the Moon and that kind of era. And Dark Side of the Moon is one of my favorite albums ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And when I floated it as an idea for the team name based on that, I don't think Mark has any particular attachment to Pink Floyd particularly, but he was just happy to go along with it. And also, I picked the name because I thought Darksiders sounded kind of cool. I thought it sounded quite memorable.
It's intimidating as well.
I've had a lot of people thinking that we were, you know, supporters of the Empire from Star Wars. because I think there is a precedent for that. There's a fantastic article from the Financial Times in 2016 by a guy called Josh Spiro, who was a member of a team called the Beekeepers.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that they were called the Beekeepers is because one of the guys in the team was a part-time beehive inspector. And that was literally the only connection they had. But then they got introduced on Only Connect as the Beekeepers, and they all united behind that banner. So,
they would have to start keeping bees after that, wouldn't they? I certainly would.
Well, tenuous connections is what it's all about, obviously. Exactly. But you were against the Suits, so-called, because of their shared love of bridge.
Yeah,
they were just smartly dressed.
Yes, I know.
Yes.
The love of the TV show that Meghan Markle used to be in. They were not smartly dressed, actually, but they were delightful. They seemed like a lovely bunch. So much fun was had in the green room afterwards, presumably.
Yeah, it was. And because... because they won that episode, the way the schedule worked was that if you lost the episode, you recorded a second one later that day. So because in this year, it's a double elimination format.
Yep.
So you record at least two episodes, and if you win at least one of those episodes, you advance to a further round. So the recording schedule for that day, we recorded our first episodes in the early afternoon, and then because we lost the first episode, we were then immediately filming the second.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to go off because they were asked to come back another day because they were then in the winner's branch. So we spent a lot of time in the green room beforehand because there was a lot of sort of sitting around waiting for them to check sounds and lighting and everything like that. And we got to know them, and yeah, they were a fantastic bunch of guys. In fact, I think we met a few of the teams, and they were all absolutely lovely, and they've all got some top talent in them. So I'm really excited to now watch the episodes that I wasn't involved in, just to sort of enjoy it as a fan again, you know?
Oh, that's so lovely. It's so lovely when you connect, isn't it, the whole thing? Everyone who does it is lovely. Everyone who works and it's lovely. Well, that's all good.
Yeah, that's what we tell you, because you've never been involved.
Because I'm not part of the club yet. I will be one day. I'm going to get some tips off you, David, later.
There's a Facebook group for Only Connect alumni, and you're not in it.
Oh, mate. You just have to, you know, it's
a 24/7 party.
Oh, man, you're just all there just making connections all the time. Just doing
it's
walls
exactly
without
that.
Me.
It's like a lovely little community. And I remember you saying in one of your recent episodes about how half all people in television are lovely and half other people are horrible.
Yes.
And everyone that worked on Only Connect was absolutely just wonderful, so welcoming, so kind. And
so
actually,
there must be another show where everyone is an absolute arse.
Well, there are many.
Every single person.
After
it's
we finish.
Yang, you've got to have the balance.
I'll name
actually
several.
After the entire series was recorded, they actually sent us a handwritten thank you note to every team to say thank you so much for being on the show. And we hope to, you know, they have occasional reunions and things like that. So,
isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a cult I want to be part of. Let's go back to the playthrough, right? So you and your lovely team against the other lovely team. A question that you got that this is, I think, the best line of the show, and it was yours. So the question was, it was N, Nigeria, B, Mumbai, D, Pigeon Forge, and H, Los Angeles.
Yes.
Now, you did not get this one, did you? You did not get
it
right.
We didn't, no.
No, and of course what it was the letter is followed by Hollywood.
Ah, yes. For that
person.
That
so Lagos, of course, Lagos.
Film industry.
Yes. So you didn't get it, but you, David Smith, made up for not getting it by having the best line, because Victoria said, and does anyone know what's the slogan? Does anyone know what the slogan of Dollywood is? And you said,
is it open 9 to 5?
Which, hey! That is such a good line. Yeah. I cheered that
just,
one.
Just came to me at the right time. You know how sometimes you just the perfect joke comes into your head.
I did, and it was wonderful. It was a wonderful moment. And then you went on and you did very well. You got the fact that some of them were Shakespeare plays translated into the language of the place they were set.
Yeah, that was we got lucky with that one, because the other team buzzed in after one clue, and I had a bit of a mini heart attack because we were already behind at that point, and I was thinking, if they get a 5-pointer here, we're pretty much done for. And they didn't get it quite right. And then, yeah, I think we got a bit fortunate with that one.
But you did very well. And then you went on to, I'll just quickly whiz through some of the walls you had. So you did, you correctly identified, bless you, films with the word blue in the title, famous Davids. But then the wall that let you down was there were various terms like balayage, dip,
oh yeah,
okay, and Jenny's nodding, Amanda knows, but you three clearly never been near a hairdresser in your lives. There was very little hair on your team, to be honest. You had the lion's share of the lion's mane, if you will, of the hair. So I did think, are they gonna get that? And hair dyeing techniques, no.
I tell you, my sisters are never going to let me forget that one. Honestly, I genuinely, I'd never heard of those. I'd never heard of three of those terms. I also said that hombre was Spanish for brother, which so I was having an.
That's another good
nightmare.
Joke, though.
It was. Pretend you were just joking, and everyone will think you're a genius. And then we came to the missing vowels round, and it was heartbreaking because you did so incredibly well. Playground games. I thought that these guys, they're slightly behind, you're going to storm through. But, again, spoiler alert, in the final analysis, it wasn't quite enough.
Yeah. I'm just happy that it was competitive because I was worried that we were going to go on and get absolutely thrashed.
Yeah.
Because we went on, we had a couple of goals before we went on the show, hardly ambitious ones. But first one was obviously, you're on television, don't make a fool of yourself. Then we sort of escalated to let's score at least 1 point.
Yeah.
Then let's see if we can solve at least one wall, which we didn't manage to do, and then win at least one episode, which we also haven't managed to do.
As yet.
You'll have to tune in to see if we manage to do those in any next episode.
Okay, well, we've got your list of achievements that you wished to tick off. But I have to say, brilliant joke, tick, lovely rapport, tick, and just generally seeming like all-round brilliant, clever, nice guys. So
stand every chance going forward.
Congratulations. We are rooting for you. We're looking forward to seeing how you get on in the rest of the series. And in fact, if you don't mind, David, we may well have you back to talk about how you get on. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. I can't wait for that.
Okay, well, we'll call this the end of part one, and we will talk to you again about your Only Connect journey. Thank you so much, David. It's been such a pleasure talking
to you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks very much. It was lovely. I've been a fan of this podcast since day one. No. So I'm just absolutely thrilled and honoured to be on it. No. And thanks, Amanda, for organising this. I know you put in a lot of work for this.
Oh, it's so lovely to have you on. Well, we can't wait. So looking forward to seeing the next one.
And
thank
keep
you
listening.
so much, my love.
Tell your friends.
All right. Thanks very much. Speak to you soon.
Right, it is time for the listener quiz.
Listener quiz.
Ooh, I love that. I like that it is. So this is from Duncan Saunders, and I am incredibly confident about this. I'm predicting a solid win for Porter here. Absolutely solid, because it's about Harry Potter, with which my children are completely obsessed.
It's a little hubristic.
I don't even care. This is very much, it's like my interview on the last time I did Celebrity Pointless, where I, bigged myself up and then was eliminated in the first round.
It can happen to anyone.
It can, but I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to say, come on, bring it on. Producer Amanda, give me these questions. I'm going to win. That's it.
Okay, well...
Just sit back, Jenny. Just, think about something else.
Well, I actually selected these questions because Duncan was kind enough to send me 3 evenings of Harry Potter-inspired quiz questions.
Ooh, well, can I have all of them? Because I would give them to my children. That'd be amazing.
Read these ones in advance?
I read them in advance.
Holy moly.
Okay, let's do this.
Okay, well, I'm excited too. So
here we go. Ready to win.
Here we go. Paul's right, are we ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. I've never been readier.
Question number 1. How many copies of the first Harry Potter book were originally printed in the first run? Was it A, 500, B, 1,000, or C, 5,000?
I'm going to go for it.
Okay.
Go on.
Well, I would say 5,000, because why would you print 1,000 of a book? Well, no, maybe actually books don't sell that many, do they?
I'll go for A.
500? No. I mean, you wouldn't. It's barely worth it.
Because I watched the Antiques Roadshow, and they had... they do the basic better and best challenge. You're looking at me blankly. they had 3 children's books, and one of them was a paperback first edition of Harry Potter.
Yes.
And it was more valuable than a first edition hardback of Matilda.
Lordy me.
Which I was quite keen on the hardback Matilda being good, because I had that. I've got that back at home.
Gosh.
Not in as good condition. Go on, Amanda.
Are you going 5,000?
No, I was going to, but now I'm going to go B and just be a bit of a coward.
Okay, so Jenny, you are right. It's 500.
Immediately.
I gave you first dibs as well.
So I should warn you, Lucy, that I was worried that if I picked questions that were so intricate regarding the plot to Harry Potter, that you might not have the chance.
Amanda, you've betrayed me.
Next time, if we've got more Harry Potter questions,
I will make sure that we
every bloody word. I've sat there having to go. The last one.
I think you're in with a really good chance with. But let's get through the other ones first, shall we?
I can get through.
Again, it's multiple choice, so you've got a chance, Lucy. Okay. Question two: how many languages have the Harry Potter book been published in? Is it A, 102? Uh-huh. Is it B, 68? Uh-huh. Or is it C, 47?
I mean, I'm going to split it down the middle and go for 68.
I'll go for the most.
And A. You're going A, you're going
yeah,
B.
Why not?
Lucy, you're right. Yay! It's 68.
Well, that was just simply cowardice.
I've done it in Latin, probably in Klingon.
Yeah.
Esperanto.
My son's just invented a language called Samol.
Oh,
so it'd
be translated into Samol any moment.
Into Samol, that's actually such a good idea.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
It'd be like a young Tolkien.
Well, that's it. That's very much his inspiration.
Yeah, I like it.
Question number three: mm-hmm. How many publishers rejected the first manuscript of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone before Bloomsbury agreed to publish it? There's no multiple choice here.
Yeah, I mean she. Yeah,
she wrote to loads. 15.
That sounds like a good guess to me. I'll
piggyback on for that.
I'll go like 12.
You're dead on, Lucy. Yes. It's 12.
Oh, good girl.
Must be somewhere in my mind. Though.
So
not on the back of.
And it was eventually Barry Cunningham, who I met, who's a lovely man.
Good old Baz.
I think he was the guy at Bloomsbury. He went, yeah, go on then.
So, question number four. I really like this question. I think it's very sweet. But why did J.K. Rowling choose King's Cross Station for Harry to take the train to Hogwarts?
Interesting.
Well, she would have been. She liked to live in Edinburgh, and I guess she would get the train from King's Cross
to Edinburgh
on the East Coast Main Line up to there.
It's
full of owls.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I suppose if you were getting a train to the Highlands, you'd either be going from Euston or King's Cross.
You'd go East Coast from King's Cross, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would. Actually, probably be getting the Caledonian Sleeper. That's from Euston, isn't it?
It is the Caledonian Sleeper.
If you're going up,
but you go Glasgow, Euston, and Edinburgh's King's Cross. Generally,
or William, kind of the West Coast up there. It's nice. Oh,
I love a train. Oh. Maybe it's because the platform 9 3/4. So she used to get a train from platform 9. Specifically, although those would be
those
more regional.
Those were the
regional,
Thames Link.
Yeah, those
yeah,
are the
those
more
were the old
sort of
Thames
Cambridge
Link ones,
and,
9 and 10.
You are not on the right track.
We're not on the right track
at all.
Okay.
Her parents met there.
That's nice.
Really nice.
That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's nice for them.
It's very, yeah, I wonder what they were doing, but hey, that's for another time.
Well, King's Panhandlers.
Lucy, okay,
come
here
on.
We go.
Yes. Wingardium Leviosa.
Avada Kedavra.
Question number five.
I just said it.
What is the name of the potion that regrows your bones?
Oh,
it's called
this is going to be so embarrassing. My kids are going to go mad.
What's she called in the
Madame Pomfrey?
Madame Pomfrey in the infirmary makes it.
Yeah, she
and
does.
It's really painful.
Yeah, that's right.
Skelegrow.
Yes,
get in.
Oh,
in your face, Porter.
God, you couldn't even let me have it, could you? You could have just written it. You could have passed on a note so that my children wouldn't despise me. But no.
That's the kind of question that we're expecting, though. So I think we can have another showdown and get the kids involved.
If someone could send in a Harry Potter quiz that is entirely about the kind of thing that 7 and 8 year olds would be interested in,
yes.
And that'd be great.
Junior quiz.
There is a kids section. There is a junior quiz section. So I will pull that out as well.
Thank you.
Yes.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Duncan.
Smashing
questions.
I mean, you know.
Edifying as well.
Oh, well, you enjoyed it. Yeah, you got it right. You won it, didn't you? Yeah, anyway, thanks, Duncan.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites.
So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Listeners, we are delighted, we are thrilled.
We are privileged.
Privileged is very much the word I would use. Can't spell it, but I'd use that word. Because we have live with us, we can see his gorgeous face.
You could touch it.
Oh, we can touch
if you
him,
to,
we can
that's
smell
allowed,
him, we can lick
no.
him. We can literally lick his face.
Didn't you try and lick Henry Kelly? I seem to remember on the podcast you said at one point you would
everyone.
If you could.
That's what we would, but particularly the one and only, you can hear his beautiful voice, it's Mr. Ben Shepherd.
Lovely to be here.
Oh, God, thanks so much for coming.
I'm literally here. This is very exciting. Our
we've never had a live guest.
IRL
Ben.
Guest.
Am I the? I'm the one.
Yeah,
I'm
you're the guinea pig. If this works, if this works,
what
then we'll
did
get
they all know that
in.
I didn't know?
If
Henry
you get
Kelly was
this.
Like, she's going to lick me. I'm not coming in the studio.
Get through without being licked.
Yes. I put that down on the contract. I'm only coming in if there's tongues. How are you? How is everyone?
We're great.
Great.
Love the podcast, by the way.
Oh well, but thank sending you. The love back at you because I mean, we'll talk about everything else that you've done, but let's get straight into it. Tipping Point. Mm. Is one of the most audacious things ever to have happened on British television.
Yes,
because
quite.
You just, right, so I'm going to start with an anecdote, right?
Ooh.
I was in Southend-on-Sea with my children,
yes.
And we're in the arcade, and we're on the Penny Falls machine, mm. And a guy came over and said, oh, I'd go for Drop Zone 3 if I were you.
Amazing.
And I went, Tipping Point fair. And he said, yes, I am. And it's become, so from something we all knew in our childhood, mm. Has now become the staple of an incredibly successful and long-running television show. And yet none of us could quite believe it when it started.
Yeah.
How did you, I mean, when they approached you, what was the pitch?
So they described the format to me, and they said, you know, we've got one of these Penny Falls machines, it's going to be a giant Penny Falls machine, and we'll ask questions and they'll put counters into the machine and we'll try and engineer getting counters out. And I said, okay, well, I know the machines, always love the machines, how's it going to work as a quiz? So we went to a rehearsal rooms in Waterloo. So the first time I saw the machine, that was built by a guy called Steve Webbo, who did, I think he did Rick Edwards' pound coin machine as well. He's done the dome for the Crystal Dome. So if something he's making for telly, a cool contraption, Webbo does it.
Yeah.
And Webbo was there and we had these four contestants, but the machine was a very sort of pared down version. And we played the game where they were answering questions, and there was four drop zones as we now know them as drop zones. They weren't actually, we just called them slots 1, 2, 3, or 4. And I'd say, so you got the question right, which one do you want to go in? And they're like, oh, I'll go on the one on the end. So we say, that's number one. Right, we'll go on number one. Okay, so when you want to release it, Webber will drop the counter in. I get asked all the time, is there someone in the machine dropping counters in? And now there's not. It's all completely fully automated.
Okay.
There is always someone there to run it because it's obviously a very complicated sort of machine. But he was just dropping the counters in. They're going, ready, steady, now go, and dropping it in. And then we'd clamber along to the next one. And what I came away from that thinking, well, it was brilliant fun to play, the contestants really enjoyed it, and it was really exciting and tense, but what's it going to be like on telly? Is that going to translate through the TV screen? And that's the thing, you just never know. I mean, you can get a sense of whether it will or not, but you know, can we generate that sort of that excitement and the anticipation and the edge of the seatness of the machine and the excitement of the gameplay to people sitting at home? And it turns out that we can, and we have.
Well, you can, Ben.
I think
not underplay your role in this.
A lot of the joy is the jargon And I want to know how much of it that you came up with, the drop zones and ghost drops.
Yeah, and so we, yeah. Well, and all it's that sort of so stuff. That's another thing that happened that day, because one of the, so it was the concept was created by a guy called Hugh Rycroft, who then took it to RDF and then sat with Lynn Sutcliffe and a couple of the other geniuses there, Neil Simpson and Peter Usher, and they sort of shaped this format. And it was Lynn who sat with me and was saying, I think we need to have some words for how it's going in, because we were still discussing, how do I go about it? Do I commentate on the machine? Do we let the machine just play out and see? You know, you're working through all those ideas.
And the machine isn't it a lot, because actually, I think one of the beauties of the format is you're constantly going back to the machine. So you have to fill a lot of time talking about that machine.
Yeah. Yes, I do. For 1,000 shows, over 1,000 shows, four a day, I'm talking to the machine.
I notice you refer to it as a her as well. I think
you've got a personified.
You definitely have. Are you slightly in love with it?
The machine's got a name, which we've never talked, which is workoutable, but it's got a name, and the name is a female name. It's pretty straightforward if you think about it, but I'm not going to give it away, because people ask me all the time.
Okay,
someone
good.
Will get it at some point. But and Lynn, I think Lynn was said originally, you've got it, haven't you? Yeah, he's got it.
We're all thinking the same name. But
And Lynn said, mate, and what should we do? And it just so happened that one of the counters that went in, because it gets a build up of static as you're dropping counts in, and that's what stops the counter, and you get a ghost drop. But it's almost like something suddenly grabbed it. It's like, and she said, you know, maybe we can call that a ghost drop. And then one fell and it started riding. And I said, well, why don't we have that as a rider? And that seemed to happen, particularly if people release at the wrong time, which is very infuriating.
Yes.
Cardinal tipping point sin. And then it slowly built from there. And it is lovely, because people send me tweets or messages all the time, like you were, Lucy, playing at Southend Pier or wherever they might be in Blackpool or at a pier somewhere playing Tipping Point, playing on a Penny Fool's machine, and their kids are doing it, and they send footage of their kids being me, where you're going to go, putting it in.
It.
And that fact that it's become part of that fabric of people's daytime TV life, but also their life outside of it, is really
it's
special.
Huge.
It's really,
it is
really
huge.
Special.
I mean, do you ever go in the arcades now, or are you barred because you know too much? No, Shepherd's in.
Too much knowledge.
It'll clean us out.
It was funny, because me and my son, this was a couple of years ago, we went for a walk. A period where I was trying to get my kids out of the house a bit more, and so we were playing Pokemon Go a lot because there was one way of bribing your children to get out is go and catch Pokemon. And we'd been on this walk for about 5 miles. We were still walking around Surrey, and we came across this this circus sort of like on a green, and we went in, and they had a Penny Falls machine, and they'd called it Tipping Point, but of course it had just been painted because it was like one of these travelling ones.
Yeah.
And they went, oh, you're not supposed to see this, because obviously they're not allowed to do that. And he said, and you're certainly not going to play it. And so Sam and I had a bit of a laugh and wandered away, but I'm pretty sure that's not there anymore. But so I
well, they've probably done that thing, you know, when they paint faces like on the on the ride.
Not quite Disney.
There's probably a not quite Ben Shepherd.
Dan Befford was the host. I haven't played since, but I mean, it's honestly, it is such an important part of my life, my family's life now as well, and has become this extraordinary thing to be a part of. And you talk about the machine as well. I thought it was really interesting. I listened to one of your podcasts from Series One, and the guy from Endemol who came up with all the stats for the chase did his spreadsheet and all that stuff. And he was saying in one of the pitch meetings, what's your thing that you've got? So if the contestants aren't great, what is the thing in the format that means it's always going to be interesting? And whatever happens, the machine, and I've stood in front of it thousands of times now, 1,100, 200 shows, whatever it is, it is still hypnotic watching this machine and trying to figure out. And I think I've got a good idea of what's going to happen, but it still does stuff that you can't imagine. And that unpredictability is what makes it exciting. And especially when people are willing to take a trade and see if they'll go for it, or even if, you know, the money comes out really quickly. Someone said to me, do you ever get bored doing it? But every time four contestants, it's a little bit like the chase, really, when you've done it over and over again. Every time the four contestants stand there, it's the first time and usually the only time they're going to get the chance to do it. Yep. And they're all so excited to be there. So it creates its own energy.
And anything can happen, because I've seen, because I know the quiz circuit, so I've seen people who are known quantities in national quizzes, and they'll go out in the first round because she's a cruel mistress.
She is a cruel mistress.
You can buzz in and get those counters, and you get nothing and then someone, you know,
it's a complete leveler, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's nice, because there is luck, undoubtedly, but you sort of feel, well, there is judgment as well.
And especially in the end game.
Yes.
If you don't go for one or four, you're an absolute moron.
Oh,
Well, if you're a stato, then you'd work that out, yeah. wouldn't you? You would know.
Oh, it just makes sense, though.
But you know what? But the reality is, I've stood in front of hundreds of games where, of course, they're going, right, I'm going to go for drop zone one or I'm going to go for drop zone four, and the counter lands somewhere and you just don't get at it at all. You know, and that's, but, and then suddenly it will drop into two or three. And sometimes I think as well, and this surprises me when we're playing the game, it feels like, and it is totally random, the amount of times I get asked, is there someone putting stuff in, or it's magnets, Ben, it's magnets. Look at this. And they'll show me footage, and I'll say, look at it, deviate, how does that happen?
Of course, the conspiracy theories come out about everything. Well,
obviously, they struggle with the fact that they're plastic counters, so the magnets, it's not going to happen. But of course, little micro bits of dirt or whatever can change the tracking once it lands in the machine, and suddenly a drop zone two or three could seem really consistent, and it all seems to be falling on the right-hand side. And I think that people don't try and read the machine enough and get a feel of it. But then, you know, everyone
it's
comes with a plan,
time they've seen
and they've
it.
All
you,
come with a plan.
You've seen it thousands of times.
But the amount of times that people come in, like you say, really good quizzes, and stand there and they try and dish out the counter in the first round. Right, I'm not going to answer this one. I'm going to get you to play it, Jen. I'm going to get Lucy to play this one, and it comes back to bite them as well.
Yeah.
And they kind of think back. Oh, Lucy got that massive 12 counter drop that should have been mine, and I passed it because I didn't think it was quite ready. You know, that's the tactics and trying to read the machine. I think is.
Has anyone ever attacked the machine?
Do you know what? I've wanted to go at it every now and again. Especially ones that are dangling over the edge. Like we've had jackpot counters that are dangling over the edge and just won't drop.
Breathe on it.
Yeah. We've had people trying to blow on it, breathe on it, kick it. You try to kick it, but the alarms go off and then security come and throw you out. Webber gets upset.
It's lovely as well because at the end, you know, normally in a quiz, it's like, so you do the quiz bit and the answers depend whether you win or lose. But there is this lovely little extra bit of like, you know, the machine will have the final say. Yeah. There will be,
And I would absolutely urge anybody that comes in to be polite to the machine as well.
I mean,
it's the most ridiculous thing that you sort of, you can't help but feel like when we've done as many as we've done and there'll be contestants that are really lovely and really want them to win and there'll be contestants come in that perhaps you don't want to win quite so much. But it just seems like the machine does it on purpose. There's like, you can't help but take it personally. Mm. And that's, drives me mad because I'm thinking it's a machine, come on, get with it, Ben. But you can't, you just think, oh, the stupid machine, just give them the counter.
They're lovely, give them
yes money. Of course, because it's not my money as well, so it's always lovely giving away someone else's money.
Oh, isn't it? And the thing about the questions is quite interesting as well, that I think it's one of the most interesting quiz shows on TV because the quiz because the question sets are slightly different. There's a lot more pop culture, I think, than most quizzes. It isn't necessarily designed for your professional quizzes or people who have memorized the champagne bottle sizes and the heraldry colors and all the things we talk about on this.
I think the Nebuchadnezzar was a question in the last series.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear it's still in there.
Which
somewhere.
I answered on your podcast as well, because I think we just recorded that show.
Yes.
That was the only reason I knew.
Well, I mean, obviously, you are now an expert
all
in
over
things
it.
Quiz.
Yeah,
but because I mean, I kind of trip up quite a lot. There's a lot of sport as well. There's quite a lot of football questions. And I always love it when you see people who are sort of quizzy type people come on and they get like, which reality TV star? And they're like, cast, no!
Killed by the Kardashians.
And then you're the guy, the last episode I watched, which author wrote the Booker Prize winning novel Last Orders? And he looked at the options and went, no idea, not read anything by any of them. Suppose if it was Last Orders, you'd have a Swift one. I'll go for Graham Swift. And it was right.
Way.
And any normal quizzer at home's gone furious. I actually knew that. I've learned that fact. Or I've read that book and he just you know, to be fair, he got his three counters.
Yeah.
Also, always go for the three counters in the last round.
Well, yes, you see, there's that
honestly,
of
you've
as well.
Got as much chance. If you're just guessing at them, you may as well go one in three counters.
It's a really interesting thing because I love quizzes. I really enjoy all the quizzes out there. And I think the question part of it, often people misunderstand tipping point and think the questions can be too easy. But of course, the fundamental thing about tipping point is unless contestants have counters, the gameplay can't be as interesting. So often what we will do is we will make sure there's a question that everyone has a chance to answer, to buzz in, to win a counter. Okay, and all the way through, there's going to be easy questions, it's going to be medium questions, it's going to be hard questions. It'd be like the chase, yeah. You know, and it's just a standard, but it's how they've shaped them mm-hmm. in order to make the gameplay and give the contestants counters, because the counters and putting it into the machine is what creates the tension and yes. the excitement as well. And brilliantly, I think in series one, you had Julia Hobson, who is yeah, on the chase at the minute.
Yeah,
so Julia was our first question writer. And I don't know whether she told you this, but you edited it out, or we didn't have time to put it into the podcast. But so I hosted One Versus 100 many years ago,
yes.
which was my first big quiz to do, which I absolutely loved. Julia came on as a contestant. Like, she said on the quiz, on the podcast, she'd won a lot of money, and then she'd been able to go off and become a quiz contestant producer. I hosted the show with Julia where she won the big money on Saturday night, and then I suddenly start doing Tipping Point, and my first question producer was Julia Hobbs, which was a really lovely. And
it's all your fault.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it's a really, really sort of underrated art, and trying to get the questions right for depending whatever, whether it's Only Connect, whether it's University mm-hmm. Challenge, whether it's The Chase, whether it's Tipping Point, whether it's Impossible, whatever it is. Questions are written in a certain way in order to facilitate the format, and I think people forget that they're just sitting at home and. What I do really love, and I think it's really important as well, is, as you know, Jenny, particularly, you get serial quizzes, you get serial TV quizzes. So mm-hmm. we've had lots of contestants that have been seen on various other shows. A lot of first timers come on Tipping Point because they feel like with the sort of the machine element that's going to help them along the way, and also because they feel like the questions can be a little bit more generous at times, they feel more comfortable doing it. And without fail, every single person that comes on and does a TV quiz or does Tipping Point wants to do another one because they've had nice. A fantastic day.
Yeah.
And really enjoyed it. And, you know, whatever happens, they want to go again because they think that was brilliant fun. And I love the accessibility of it.
It's
and
a gateway also, quiz.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes,
yeah, yeah.
You are. You are tempting in the next generation of quizzes.
Like a gateway drug. Wow. And people often go away with money.
Yes.
I get that a lot. They enjoy Tipping Point because after all that hard work, you can choose to take the money or you can choose to take yeah. the trade.
Most shows,
someone will go with £2,000 or £3,000.
Very rare.
When you've invested an hour at home sitting watching these people, you know, often you want them to leave with something. Yeah. So, the question part of it is I find it fascinating. Now, having worked with Tipping Point, worked at Tipping Point for so many years and done other quizzes and understanding the importance of those questions and the standard of the questions and interesting questions and the shape of the idea of how they package those questions up, you understand what an art that is.
Yes.
Because if you get it right, the format can fly.
Well, yeah, and if people are sitting there completely turned off by the questions, then, you know, even the beauty of the format isn't going to keep them
yes,
there,
right.
is it? But it's, I mean, it is the balance of it all works very well. and our mystery guest, yeah.
is that Richard Maitland?
Julia Hobbs. She's here tonight. But you are, I would say, such a major part of why it works, because you are lovely with people.
Mm, thank you.
And you're lovely with that machine. You treat her like a lady. because you.
She's had the best years of my life.
She has, isn't she? She has. Her indoors, her in the studio. Because you already say you did. You also did Krypton Factor.
I did, yeah. I did two series of the Krypton Factor when we brought it back. And that was incredible. I mean, that's at the different end. I think that's sort of mixed, though, isn't it? Because, of course, there's the quiz at the end of that, but also you've got the game show elements as well with the intelligence round and the observation round and, of course, the assault course. And when we brought it back, and it was made by Michael Kelpie, who's the exec on The Chase now,
yes,
of course. And when we brought it back, we were trying to squeeze a 45-minute show into half an hour slot. We didn't quite have enough time, but the technology involved in some of those games was just remarkable. And the brains of the contestants as well. Mm. They were asking questions that we put them in that cube and we'd link them up to the heart rate monitor, and then they'd get questions and they had to try and work out time differences around the other side of the world in different hemispheres and stuff.
Yeah.
It was just mesmeric to watch them, but then also terrifying when they buckle and you could see it just all unraveling in front of you.
Yes.
That was an extraordinary, and I'd been a massive Krypton Factor fan as a kid, particularly the assault course.
Yeah,
you know,
legendary, absolutely legendary.
When I got that gig and they announced we were doing it, I had a lovely email from Gordon Burns. Actually, he emailed me saying, "Ben, I'm really thrilled that you're going to be doing it. I think it's been primed for a comeback for ages. And just so you know, the our best rating episode was Christmas, blah, 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 blah. We got 17.5 million, so good luck.
Oh, Gordon.
But really lovely that you took the time to sort of contact me and say, you know, well done. And
but then
luck.
I think, you know, that affection for the format is something that you as a game show, quiz show host can appreciate, I guess. Because it's not just like, you know, it's something that you do and walk away from, is it? You're invested in
it. No, and you understand that there are people watching at home, there are viewers watching at home that have loved it and lived it. And we used to watch it as a family. Mm. And all of us would get something. For me as a kid, it was about the assault course.
Yep.
For my mum, it was about the observation
round.
Because
I loved
it was, you know, that was her thing. For my dad, it was the quizzing at the end. Mm. My brother and sister might be in the intelligence round because they're the ones in the family that are intelligent. But, you know, so we all had something. There was that lovely, there was a layer to it that everyone could take away that we really look forward to. So you understand the sort of the privilege of being in that position and getting the chance. And it was lovely to bring it back for the two series that we brought it back for. Yeah. We tried to change the assault course slightly. So the original assault course was linear. So it was four people ran against each other on a long straight line. And of course you had the zip wire at the end where they literally just grabbed the zip wire, flew down, hit the water, and that was it. You can't do that anymore. Health and safety wise, you have to be hooked up to a harness. Yeah. You can't zip wire down to the ground. You have to stop high enough because they don't want anyone to hurt their legs. So there were sort of restrictions put on us then suddenly. So everyone's going, the assault course isn't. Actually, the assault course was way hard and way better, but we just remember that linear, so you could see people catching up and that sort
of stuff. It's funny how people want actual danger, isn't it?
That's come on, if you're not going to really break your legs, what's the point?
We want like the jump, you know, where people are ending their careers on this
snap your spine.
That is why that carried on for so many series, I think, because the ratings must
who's gonna have now? A life-changing injury today.
At the end of the assault course though, and they were up that tower and then they go to grab it. They could have just, I mean, I think they might have had to put their hands through a little loop.
Yeah. Mm.
But honestly, someone could have let go at that point. They weren't harnessed on and they're sort of, you know, 20, 30 feet up in the air. It's miraculous now.
Yeah.
It is. I know. Wow. I prefer to live in times where we do have some regard for health and safety, actually.
Nobody needs to see anyone.
But it's not a great telly. But, you know, And so who were your inspirations as a quiz and game show host? Who, growing up, did you think?
I loved all the, as a TV host, as a TV presenter, the any of the interviewers that I really love, Michael Aspel was fantastic, and Terry Wogan and those shows. We saw Russell Harty, those shows that were sort of late tea time, early evening sort of shows. I used to love those shows. Henry Kelly, I mean, you talked about him, but I watched Going for Gold religiously for years. Bob Holness on Blockbusters, which I got to do. We did the game show marathon, which Vernon
you
hosted.
You won it on the game show marathon.
I did my gold run and I got
Don't hide your light under a bushel. You won that, Megan.
The only reason I didn't go on to win the whole of the series was because my wife got involved in Mr. and Mrs. and we just don't know each other at all.
Like, frankly, have you met?
She was the letdown. You know, you remember the questions you get wrong. Well, I remember the wife that was a bad choice.
It's very good that your relationship has withstood that.
Yeah, I can't quite believe it. She's still surprised to this day. And also, Jim Bowen, because I loved Bullseye. And one of the really, this is a completely out of the blue, we had no idea this was the case, but we were filming Tipping Point in Twickenham, which isn't far, in southwest London, which isn't far from where we live. And the boys, it was summer holidays or Easter holidays, and my kids were going to come down, and their mates were over from school. And my kids are 2 years apart, and they've got mates with brothers the same age. And they said, could they come down? They love the show. Yeah, of course they can. So they came down with their mum, and it just so happens, it's a complete chance, we had no idea, they were Jim Bowen's grandsons.
What?
So my wife's friend Sue, who's their mum, was Jim Bowen's daughter. And Sue came, and she'd been with Jim that day. He'd been down staying with them. And they said, granddad, we're going to go and see Tipping Point because Ben's blah, blah, blah. This is what she told me afterwards. He was like, now remember, boys, I want you to tell me how many cameras there were. Look at the lights, go into the gallery. And he was giving them all the top tips.
Aww.
And when Sue came in, she said, I haven't ever told you this, Ben, because it's never really come up in conversation, but my dad's Jim Bowen. So, and I went, hold up, what? My dad's Jim Bowen. And
why didn't you lead with that? When you meet anybody.
Exactly. In the middle of the studio.
Just have a t-shirt, mate.
I said, hold on. Say that again. Right, everyone stop. I made everyone stop. The lighting crew, the sound crew. Right, everyone. This is Jim Bowen's granddaughter. And everyone spontaneous round of applause for Jim.
Lovely.
And I just used to love what he did on Bullseye.
Yeah, it's very natural, isn't he?
Just easy. And you know, and the way she talks about that, and he wasn't the first choice for Bullseye as well, you know, apparently. Okay. But then that, of course, became sort of this, he became Bullseye, didn't it? It was the two of them together with the format with the darts and him as well. You couldn't have imagined them sort of not being there. And so that sort of warmth and generosity.
Yeah.
But and I loved, at the same time, I can love Anne on Weakest Link and that sort of sharpness and brutality. And I've done quizzes.
That's not you, though.
Krypton Factor was a little bit more like that, but it's not, and you understand that as you go through, that, to be honest, I really want them all to win. I want them to go away with as much as possible, and I want them to have a fantastic time, because I know if they've had a great time, the show's probably going to be more sort of viewable and watchable.
Yes.
And that's exciting.
Yes. You know? Oh, I mean, and there is something about it that feels very wholesome, is a word that I would use to describe it, which is nice.
Well, everyone gets a Ben Shepherd hug. Oh,
the hugs are free.
Famous.
The hugs are free. I do get turned down occasionally, though. You would be surprised. But the hugs, that as well. People say you're genuinely excited when they win. I am, really. Like I say, it's not my money that I'm giving away, and for lots of these people. So the series we've just filmed, we had a guy that's actually not going to come out till next year. We had the first ever double jackpot winner. Guy called Clive, who got the double, he got the jackpot counter out and the double counter for the first ever time. And it's hilarious. When I watched it back, because literally I just squealed like a kid when it fell out. We watched it back and I made them play it back on the studio floor, which we can never do. And I'm like, I was so excited. And Clive wanted to take his wife and his grandkids to go and see their family in Australia, which they hadn't been able to see. And he's booked his tickets and he's on his way. And then we had Gareth, who was the guy that didn't take the trade in the series that's just on air at the minute. He didn't take it. He had £3,000, and that was enough, £3,500. And the double counter fell with the jackpot counter. So had he taken the trade, he would have gone with £20,000. And that was the first time it had happened. So there was this moment I've always imagined this as this most triumphant, jubilant moment where the double jackpot goes, someone's getting £20,000, and it was going to be the most exciting thing. And the absolute agony and pain I went through was desperate, because I didn't know what to say, because I've always imagined it being this moment of sheer joy, and it was the absolute opposite. And he was brilliant, to be fair, because he'd come to terms with the fact that I've got £3,400.
That's a life-changing amount for some people.
That's more than I came with.
Yeah.
But I was absolutely gutted. I was on my knee. I was just gutted for him when things like that happen.
Yeah.
And there's moments like that, just pepper it all the way through. So it doesn't matter how many you've done or what they are. There's like these sort of standout moments that sort of live with you that make it really, really special.
It's an emotional ride.
It is.
I think I might need a Ben Shepherd hug.
Have you done it? You've not done it yet.
No, but you know.
Because we had a Chasers special.
Eminently available.
Yeah, I wasn't invited.
No, I don't think you were chasing then though, were you?
I was.
Oh, crikey, that's awkward.
Yeah.
Were you?
Yep.
Were you really?
I really was.
That's it. Well, we'll come on together next time.
It's just been my fourth anniversary.
Has it?
Yeah.
So you must have been. Well, I'm sorry about that, but there's only three contestants
in
the celebrity one, which means we keep them for two rounds.
Yeah.
But maybe we can do a Fingers on Buzzers special.
Oh.
Yeah. I think it might have to be not televised. I don't think ITV will go for it, but we'd
need a third Amanda,
We'll do it here and now.
They would not want me on. I can barely read the questions.
Well, you would need to read the questions. Ben would read the questions, okay, Amanda. Well, you'd be fine.
The good news is, I mean, this is the point about Tipping Point. You could actually get to the final without answering a question.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you can be handed a count in the first couple of rounds and you could get a really great windfall of counters, and that can, and you can go through. That's that sort of that unknown element, the unpredictability of the machine.
If the machine likes you,
who
knows?
Then you're good. Right. Lovely. Okay, so we've just basically the reason we got you here, Ben, was to talk our way into doing this show. So
I'd
that's
have you at the
fine.
Job for that. Would be lovely.
Well, please do continue. It's been 7 years now.
Yes, 2012 we started. Yes. So we did the 1,000th episode. We've done 1,200 or something.
Goodness.
And it's seemingly people still really, really love it.
It's like the little brother of the chase, because a lot of people do pair them up.
Yeah,
it's a warm up kind of show.
I think the two of them work in tandem really, really nicely, don't they? Sort of, it's that sort of quizzing couple of hours now, that slot. and it's pretty sort of powerful stuff from a ratings perspective and for ITV, which is really exciting. I've done plenty of shows that I thought were great that never got recommissioned. We've just done series 10, so you know,
that's
something's going right.
Absolutely,
yes. which is great.
Well, here's to many, many more.
Yes.
And thank you so much, the wonderful, the one and only Ben Shepherd.
Thank you.
Yay. Now about this hug, come on, hug it.
Hug it out. Hug it out.
So that was a final series ending episode of Fingers and Buzzers.
And it was a reap bonanza.
It was a bonanza.
My great grandma would have called a beefer.
Oh, what a lovely thing.
A beefer. A beefer to her was a night out where you had at least a pie, a pint, and a fight.
Well, I mean. You couldn't have anything better than that,
there
could you?
Go.
And Beefy Ben Shepherd, he was on it.
Yes.
We had Beefy, well.
Bovine, no.
No. Lovely Bovril. David Smith.
He likes Bovril.
Yeah. David Smith, he likes nothing more than, he's a Bisto kid. Bisto kid, David Smith. We had a quiz, a meaty old quiz about Harry Potter set by Duncan Saunders. And we talked about quizzing in the naughty. So I have to say, it's been a pleasure, as always, doing this series with you, Miss Jenny Ryan.
And you, Miss Lucy Potter, and Ms. Amanda
Ms. Amanda Redman, the power behind all the beefy power.
The pleasure is all mine, and hopefully we'll be back still this year, I'm hoping.
Yeah. So keep your eyes and ears peeled for live specials, which are on the cart.
Yay!
So thank you very much to all of you. The most important people are gorgeous listeners. Thank you, and goodbye!
Bye.
Fingers on Buzzers starred Lucy Porter and Jenny Ryan and was produced by Amanda Redman, with music by Kevin MacLeod and Justin Edwards. Email quiz at fingersonbuzzers.com and tweet at fingersbuzzers. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to join us next time for more Fingers on Buzzers!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.